everybody. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate your attendance, board members, as well as our consultants and distinguished guests that are here. I'm Tom Benton. I have the honor to chair the meeting today. Would like to call it to order. It is 11:30 on October 17, 2023. If you all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, we'll start our meeting.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It kind of has a little bit of a special meaning, given what's going on in Israel and the Gaza Strip. Says quite a bit about the value of our country. So we do have an agenda that's been prepared by staff. Are there any items on the agenda that need to be moved from one direction to the other?
No.
Very good. Thank you. Any commissioner that wishes to address any of the items on the agenda? No. Okay. I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is our commissioner comments section. Anybody have comments for today?
Sure, we'll probably address the air show that went on this weekend, but it was phenomenal. It was amazing. Well done. My kids loved it. I loved it. So well done to the staff and everybody who was involved in it.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Cody.
Thank you. We did fantastic.
I think somebody got a ride in one of those aerobatic airplanes that's in the room here at the moment. Is there any truth to that? Did somebody get a ride in?
Interrupt you, Mr. Chairman. I think the phone's on.
Oh, I'm sorry. There we go. Thank you for calling that out.
Oh, you're welcome. No, I haven't been blessed with riding an aerobatic aircraft.
That's awesome.
I know a lot of you may have seen some of those YouTube videos where the guy in the back seat of the Blue Angel faints, you know, for a few minutes. And I'm pleased to say, because I caught up with Ben, he did not faint during that experience. So, congratulations.
We did some rolls.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That speaks to the toughness of our staff. So.
That's right.
It was great. I appreciate all that were involved with making that happen.
Thank you for representing us.
Well deserved.
Any other comments? Okay, I will echo what Cody said. Significant appreciation to Dale and your team and other staff members that made this possible. Logistics of putting on an air show that happens once every 2 years or 3 years in this case, when you're not doing it on a regular basis, that's a challenge. So Cameron, I know you had a big hand in it too. So everybody that's here, I suspect, did. So thank you for your efforts in making that turn out. It looked seamless from the outside. Okay, citizen comments today. Anybody in the room that's joined us that may have filled out a form?
Mr. Chairman, we did have a registered citizen comment, but they are not here to present, so I believe we just move on.
Okay, they didn't sign in. They're not in the waiting room online?
No. Nope,
okay, very good.
And if we can back up to get a roll call so we can have everybody.
Sure, we'll do that. Okay, thank you, Cameron. Appreciate the call out for the agenda items without the roll call. So we'll go through the agenda, or the roll call. Commissioner Schrader?
Here.
Commissioner Velarde?
Here.
Commissioner Marshall?
Here.
Commissioner West?
Here.
Commissioner Davis?
Here.
Commissioner Wrights?
Here.
And the chair's here as well. Thank you. And staff members, let's go ahead and call out staff members that are here present as well as online.
Yes, I can do that. So in the room, we have Executive Director Angela Padalecki, Director of Finance and Administration, Diana Thomas, Director of Facilities, Ben Peck, Director of Operations, Dylan Heberlein, Finance Manager and HR Manager, Jennifer Croker, Office Coordinator, Christina Warren, and myself, Cameron Reese, Board Clerk, and then online we have Accounting Coordinator, Shayla Flesh.
Thank you, Cameron. Other members joining us are our counsel, Dan Reimer. Thank you for being here. Brad Rolfe is here today online. And in present, Colin Bible. Thank you for being here, Colin. Allison Thomas, thank you for being here. Jeremy Lee, that's great. I think Austin is back there too. Nice to see you, Austin. Appreciate that. And Drew Armstrong, one of the members of our Finance and Audit Committee. Thank you for your attendance as well. Did I miss anybody? Okay, very good. All right, next item is our consent agenda. There's a couple of things associated with the consent agenda. One is the minutes from the last meeting, September 19th. And the other is the Plant Moran audit engagement letter that we presented as part of your package. If there's no questions about those items, I'd entertain a motion to consent agenda items as they were prepared and presented.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you. Our action item today is the resolution for appointing a new budget officer that's joined us. Diana, thank you for being here. Presenting that resolution today, I think, Angela, do you want to present the resolution today for that?
Sure, it's pretty boring, and I think this is the third or fourth time that you've seen it this year, but I hope that it will be the last. So this just formally designates Diana as the treasurer of the board and the budget officer. The designation had shifted over to me temporarily while we were short. I was really happy to have Diana here, and she's doing a phenomenal job. I wasn't sure on the budget officer piece in particular if someone so new would be able to step into that role, but she's done a marvelous job.
And if you had a chance to share, I missed one board meeting, so I apologize if you've already shared kind of a little bit of your history of what you've done. Have you been able to do that yet for the board?
I don't know, not in the board meeting.
Okay.
So I'm happy to give a little bit of the background.
Sure.
I have 30 years of financial leadership experience. I started my career as an auditor, and I moved into controllership roles. When my kids were young, I ran my own accounting practice. So I started with one person. The next thing I know, I've got 20 employees and 1,000 clients. And when my kids went back to school, I started back into the commercial world again, primarily with private equity companies. So really delighted to start this new chapter working for a completely different entity. It is so interesting and exciting for me to learn about the airport. I love airplanes. Angela will tell you I'm a former skydiver. I usually don't share that, but this aviation community, I think, will forgive me. Mostly pilots don't really feel good about skydiving people jumping out of an airplane. But it did give me quite a bit of exposure to the aviation community. And I'm also a member of the Civil Air Patrol, have been. My husband and I have served for about 11 years. I hold the rank of major, and I'm their finance officer, of course, and also am quite involved in cadet programs. Both of my kids went through the Civil Air Patrol program, and they are both active duty military. So my son serves in the Air Force, and my daughter in the Navy. So that's just a brief background.
Great. Thank you, Diana. Diana's being a little bit modest, I think, with respect to her background, working with private equity companies. Former chair of this board, Steve Wood, sold Capco, and that private equity firm hired Diana to sort of a number of government contracts and things of that nature that we oversaw in those processes. So I think there's some similarities here.
Very similar.
To some of us who aren't skydivers, that does present a little bit of risk, but I know you leave that at home rather than bringing that to the table as our CFOs. Thank you.
We made it through 1,100 jumps, so I'm mitigating that.
Managing that risk well.
I don't
so.
Even want to do one.
Like, as I've thought about that, I'm like, taking off in an airplane 1,100 times, and then, you know, she often remarks, she's like, yeah, taking off 1,100 more times than I've landed.
Once a week.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I did it for about 10 years.
Wow.
Super fun.
Thank you. Any questions for Dan? Okay, very good. I'd entertain approval of the resolution as prepared today. That's resolution 2023-013, appoint budget officer and treasurer. If somebody wishes to move that and include that language in the motion, that'd be great.
Sure, I'd be happy to make a motion to adopt resolution number 2023-013 to appoint Diana Thomas as the budget officer and treasurer.
Second.
Further discussion? Hearing none, we'll do a roll call vote. Commissioner Weitz?
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Yes.
Commissioner Marshall?
Yes.
Commissioner Velarde?
Yes.
Mr. Schrader?
Yes.
Okay, and the chair votes to approve as well. Motion carries. Thank you. Welcome aboard. And Angela, some of those duties that have been on your desk are now off to the side.
Ben and I have been high-fiving for a month now, and all the hats we're getting rid of. So we don't never want back.
And Jennifer.
So, and just yeah. And that's right. I want to make sure too, because not the full board was here before, but Jennifer Croker has also joined our team. So she is the finance and HR manager, and she also has an interesting background. Do you want to share a little bit about your background?
Absolutely.
I'd like to hear.
Absolutely.
She's like, no.
we like to know our staff.
I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
No, well, I guess I started working for CPU when I was
Jennifer for sharing those. Chris and I had a chance to interview Jennifer during the discussion process, and she did work for a competitive firm. And Chris asked some very tough questions. I gotta tell you, so thank you for getting past Chris West in this process.
That wasn't that tough.
Welcome.
I almost gave her my card, though.
Just in case this job doesn't work out, you know where else you can land. My sense is that Angela's going to be able to hold you before Chris gets you.
Well, I will say, I asked Chris when he was giving me feedback, I said, would you hire? He's like, yeah, I'd hire her.
Wait. All right, thank you, Jennifer. Welcome aboard. Next item on the agenda is part of the process for our budget for 2024. The screen above indicates kind of what's been happening for the last several months with internal department meetings. I know Ben and Dylan have been active in this, as well as Angela and a number of the other department folks. The Finance and Audit Committee has reviewed this, and I'll let Chris talk a little bit about what that process looks like and the scope of their interactions. So, Chris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I can just a brief overview. The Finance and Audit Committee did meet last week on November 7th. Here in this room, Drew joined us, and with Diana and Angela and Jennifer. Had a good discussion on the budget, kind of dove into some of the details, had received a copy in advance of that, kind of questioned some of the assumptions and format and just went through it in detail. And then some email follow-up after that meeting, some back and forth, and appreciate the committee's effort. Ron, I know he's part of that effort as well. And feel really good about where the budget is and all the hard work that went into it. Really thankful to the team that put that together under Diana's leadership. So we have picked and poked and prodded a little bit on the budget and feel confident and good about it.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Drew.
And open it up to any of the team's comments as to any further details that you'd like to present.
I will say that the budget process, I've been through quite a few of them, and this is a very robust process. Mm-hmm. And the team did a fantastic job of going down lower into the details so that we can make sure the information is really accurate. So really, really impressed. The comments that the committee made were very, very helpful. We made a couple adjustments based on those comments, which is exactly how the process is designed. So our next step with this is after this meeting, we'll be looking at it a little bit further for some refinement, and then the hope is adoption at the November board meeting.
Very good. How would you, would we like to spend a few minutes in digging into the budget a little bit?
Absolutely. There's a couple more slides. I'm going to let Angela present the activities. After 6 weeks, I think she knows that part a lot better. And then I can get into some of the high-level financials in the next few slides.
Very good. Thank you. Angela?
Sure. So this year, as we talk about the budget, there's a few themes that I think stick out and will show up over and over. And one of them is just the stability of air service compared to the year, most recent years. We finally got to drop 2019 off on all of our comparisons because it feels like this was a pretty normal year. Last year, second half of last year was starting to feel pretty normal, and just in conversations with airlines, things feel pretty stable. Also, I want to make sure that I cover just the more of the philosophical side of the budget and how our team puts together a budget. So we are conservative on the revenue side because we want to make sure that it's reasonable and we're confident that we can generate that revenue, but not aggressive. It doesn't represent the goal or something like that, because as we're putting budget together, that's the revenue that we feel completely confident we can generate, and that helps inform on the expense side what we can afford. And so the expense side represents what we need to run the airport. And so, like most budgets, there's this iterative process, but I know different organizations handle their budget in different ways, and I want to make sure it's clear that this is not a budget that represents the goals of the airport. This is a budget that represents the baseline. So with that, what really fuels the revenue budget is airline activity, both because we collect revenue from the airlines, but also because passengers are what feed our business lines. I know you all understand that, but want to make sure as we just pull back little bit on the process, that it's clear that our assumptions actually start with airport activity and, you know, with a strong focus and attention to detail on the airline side, because that's what moves the needle the most on both sides of the operating budget, the revenue and the expense. And so what you see here are our assumptions, and we've included 2023 budget so you can compare. And so we're budgeting for slight growth in enplanements compared to what we have forecasted, but not compared to what we budgeted. So we expect enplanements to come in above our budget this year. And we look at it by route. And so, and these reflect airline conversations we've had, and I have an update on that in my report. But American Airlines has seen lower load factors on some of their flights, in particular to Dallas, and so they are pulling back and only flying twice per day during this immediate winter season, so starting second half of November. I think I have all those dates in there, but took those conversations in and said, okay, what do we feel confident will be flown? And so this is what we budgeted for the airlines to fly. So American, we budgeted they will fly 2 to 3 flights per day to Dallas and to Phoenix throughout the year. Now we look by month because there's seasonality in our business, but taking a conservative approach with the frequency and the aircraft type. Allegiant, we have budgeted that they will continue to fly Las Vegas year round and that they'll have summer service to LAX again. We did not include in the budget any activity to Mesa. They've indicated that they intend to return to Mesa. They're not returning this spring. And so when it comes to the budget, there's not, that isn't going to have a big impact either way, and we want to be conservative. And then last, United is growing like crazy. So United carries more passengers out of our market now than American, and their sales seat capacity is significantly higher in the next 6 months compared to Americans, and they're continuing to grow. So in their conversations, it was my favorite network planning conversation ever where they didn't add a new route. So it started, hey, we have a presentation prepared. It looks like things are going pretty well from our perspective. We want to check in with you. How are things going? Head of network planning. Things are excellent. They're going exactly to plan. That's how he said it. Best words ever to come out of his mouth. So they are doing very well. They've grown a lot here, and their load factors remain really high, so they're continuing to grow. They're actually going to upgauge a second flight, a midday flight, to a mainline aircraft starting in January. And they intend to keep it that way, so that's what's included in our budget. Now, they have various size mainline aircraft, so what we've budgeted is on the small end, the smallest actually for that. We've still included smaller regionals just to be conservative, keeping them at 5 flights per day. So any questions on activity assumptions? Because that really drives the financial numbers. Okay. Next slide then.
So this is a really high level summary of the information that we presented in the board packet. But I just direct your attention to the last column, 2024 budget, where you can see that we're essentially presenting a balanced budget. So $366K favorable from the prior, from the activity that's rolling through the financials. So a lot of it's driven by the capital expenditures and contributions. That's a big driver. You can also see from an operating income standpoint that it's very, very favorable.
So that's another thing that you're going to see pop up in this budget, is we finally have a defined rate-making methodology for airline rates and charges. So historically, the airport just occasionally increased rates, and then we didn't increase rates, you know, for most of the 2010s. And then we came up with this rate-making methodology, which really modernizes the rate-making methodology for the airport, and to really simplify, because this is how I think about things, we say how much do we need to spend in order to operate the airport, take that, divided by the activity level in the airfield or the square feet in the terminal, depending on where the costs are incurred, and that becomes the base rate for the airlines, and then we discount that rate by how much non-airline revenue we generate in those cost centers. That's essentially how this works. What it means is that we are now in a position where, you know, we have really sustainable growth. It's not how do we make ends meet, because the math equation is circular. And so with that methodology, that puts us in a sustainable path long term. Now, initially, when we started getting onto this path, if we took that approach, the rate increases would have been astronomical for their lives. And so what we did is we worked with them to say, hey, we will cap rate increases at 15% per year because we need to be good to our customers, fair to our customers, and we don't want, you know, these goals to maintain our capital plan, those things to start to compete against our air service development goals if we become expensive for the airlines to operate at. And so they were agreeable. That's kind of the Cliff Notes version of what is in that airline use and lease agreement and how that works out. But what it does is it puts you in this position where your budget naturally balances itself. This is with that 15% rate cap, and you still see that it's balancing itself. And again, we took a pretty conservative approach on the revenue side and on the expense side. So this was a calibration year. You know, the last couple of years, it was really hard to look into your, harder than usual, to look into your crystal ball and say, what do we need next year? And Ben loves when we come to him and say, Ben, what do you need for next year? He's like, oh gosh, I don't know. What's the price of supplies going to be? And what's this? You know, there's so many moving parts. But as things have settled down a little bit, big thanks to Dylan and Ben, because their team spent a tremendous amount of time this summer really calibrating and saying, what are the costs now of these different things? We don't want to just extrapolate based on what we've been seeing. Let's recalibrate, let's rebuild the budget from the bottom up and have confidence in that so that it's a useful tool next year as well.
Are there any questions about the budget?
Yeah, could you just maybe go through each of the line, the major lines, and explain what they entail?
Yeah, sure. So the total operating revenues are both the aeronautical and non-aeronautical revenues that come into the airport. So all of the landing fees and all of the parking, everything that goes into bringing money into the airport. There's operating expenses, and I might have to have Angela help me with some of these. It's also what it costs to run the airport on both the air side and the land side, correct?
Yep.
And so that would be the basic, the net operating income is revenue versus expenses, so favorable. The non-operating revenues have to do with capital expenditures, grant funding, debt service. So we have bonds and we have a loan. And so anything that is not part of the normal operation of the airport goes into the non-operating section. So you can see with the non-operating activity, it's negative. And it's negative because we're spending money on capital projects and we have a match portion. So it's not 100% funded. So does that help to walk you through it?
What's the difference between non-operating revenues and capital contributions?
So the non-operating revenues have to do with, can you help me?
Yeah, so yes. I'll cover that. So non-operating revenues, what that's mainly consists of is the PFC revenue. So we are authorized by Congress to collect a $4.50 per passenger boarding a flight fee that gets remitted back to us by the airlines.
Which can be used for capital.
And that can be used for eligible expenses, exactly. So it can be used for capital, but it's restricted funds. And we actually, our debt, when we took out our debt, we pledged our PFCs to that. So PFCs go towards debt service. They don't fully cover our debt service payment. We actually use unrestricted cash to cover the rest. And then the second big one in there is similar, but is the CFC, so the car rental facility charge. And so that is charged per transaction day on rental cars. And that funding is restricted. It's governed by us. There's not federal rules that govern that funding, but that's the funding we use to invest in rental car facilities. So a couple of years ago, we built the fuel site. We redid the rental car counters. Ben's been working with the rental car companies on other projects that they really need in order to meet, to just continue to serve the public in a strong way. So rental cars, when I think of rental cars as a business line, rental cars require very little. They're probably the most profitable business line because they require very little from us. In terms of investment, because we have dedicated funding source for that. Okay. Does that make sense?
Another big component.
Interesting.
Yes. That's the last one. So, and we're really happy that one's so big. So, we budgeted conservatively, but not stupidly. So you're not going to see, we hope you won't see any, well, actually, I hope you do see some 1,000% variances, because then we're making lots more money. Just kidding. The economy would be weird. But this year you saw, if you look at our variances on our monthly on a monthly basis, the variance is like, you know, thousands of percent because we're generating so much more. But we assumed rates idea of what our cash balance is, we would anticipate they'll be. So we used averages there to estimate that.
And then the capital contributions?
Those are the grant revenues coming in. And
yes.
So it's mainly the AIP grants, but as a reminder, CDOT also typically gives us $250,000 towards our match for the AIP program. So we have to cover 10%. They'll cover half of that match up to $250,000 because we have so much going on. We've been hitting that 250 cap. So it's those two together. And then any discretionary grants. So that capital expenditure, or excuse me, the capital contributions line for 2023 included that $4 million CDOT grant we got for 422.
Perfect.
Any other questions?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Do you have additional slides for this?
Not on the budget.
Okay. Questions regarding the budget? Ron, I know you were involved in that as well to some degree.
Yeah, some, and then I didn't go to the last meeting, unfortunately.
Sure.
But I will say that, I mean, based on what I've read and what I've seen, you can, I mean, they've done an excellent job. I'm talking about the auditors, I'm talking about all the people that are involved in it. I mean, it was pretty interesting, and they did an excellent job.
Thank you.
Well,
I do have, go ahead.
The forecast 2023 in capital expenditures is down about $11 million. Is that the project got
That's really just because of how we budgeted 2023. So when we're putting this budget together this time of year, sometimes we've met with our partners at the FAA and CDOT and when we're putting this together, and sometimes we haven't. So last year we hadn't. And so we talked to Colin and said, hey, what's the most that we might spend? Because again, you know, we want to make sure that we're generating enough revenue to cover our expenses. So what's the most that you think we might spend on our CIP? And so that's what that looked like. And that was with if we were able to snag a big end of year grant that we sometimes, you know, we've been able to do a little bit in the past. There wasn't money available for that this year, and so that's really that difference. And then we've already met with FAA and CDOT about our CIP for next year, and so that's why if you look at the 2024, that number is more dialed in. Plus, the work is going on now, like we're in such an active construction period that Colin has, and Jeremy, you know, they've worked together constantly. They have a much better idea of what work is actually going to happen next year. And, you know, you all approved contracts for it. And I feel bad because we're constantly asking them to translate things from grant funding years into actual activity. Like, when is this going to happen? When are we going to pay it? And so that's really just us dialing things in and feeling more confident than ever, from my perspective, on what that number will look like.
Thank you.
Anything to add, Colin?
No, I think so.
I'd like to thank you for providing significant detail with respect to the handout to the commissioners. Unfortunately, for some of us who geek out on the numbers, that creates some question opportunities. So on page 9 of 12, I know you guys probably already covered this, land and building lease, a 10% increase for the last 2 years of CPI. My sense is with inflation, it'll probably drive that, and that's probably where you're coming from. My only comment would be is those recipients of that CPI index increase should probably be getting a notice to that effect long before April.
Yes.
But this is what we anticipate doing. So to keep them from having too much sticker shock, that's something I think we should be proactive about. Because that's normally that would be in that 4% range, and then from a business perspective, but this is going to be a little higher, I suspect.
Yeah, that's
a great comment. The second issue is on page 11 under fuel expense. It indicates that we anticipate that to be similar to 2023 costs. I think there's enough tension internationally that, from what I can read in business journals, a minimum of 7% increase over 2023 seems to be fairly common for the outlook for that. So I don't know if we want to rethink that piece a little bit or just hold it and recognize that we have some risk exposure.
Yeah, we had considered that because you had sent me a note about that.
Yeah.
We had discussed it and decided to hold it steady. I think this will be part of the refinement process between now and adoption. We'll see if we can get some really, we don't have any concrete information at this point, other than speculation. So if we can get some really good indicators, that would give us a better idea other than sort of a gut feel, I think that would be wise to make that change.
Yeah. Take a look, Diana, and just Google anticipated forecasted fuel prices for 2024, and I think there's four or five sources that are citing anywhere from 7% to 40% increases.
Yep.
Hopefully it's not going to be
40%. Range, so.
Yeah, right. So.
So with that, Tom, I just want to make sure my belief is that if we're going to change that, we should probably change all of those fuel elements, many of which aren't called out here because we sell revenue, or excuse me, we sell mm-hmm. fuel to the rental car companies and the airlines, and so it needs to affect that side too. And so we're happy to do that. We want to make sure that we land on a spot that
yeah.
we feel pretty good about. It's going to change quite a few things.
Right, and it may be that our consumption expense just for the vehicles that the airport has, if we saw an increase of our usage, because the other parameters are passed through, if that's a minor number that comes out, if you apply a 7% to 10% number to that, and it's less than $10,000, that's not a big miss in this case. So
yeah, I think we could probably do it on the expenditure side, just not do it on the revenue side. Because the big one is we purchase all that fuel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it shows up in the expense budget is the purchase. You know, there's also what we keep because the other's a pass through, but it shows up on the other side. It shows up on the revenue side as sales.
Sure, I understand. But that was a nice job. Thank you for the additional detail on there. And that would conclude some of my comments on there. So
thank
nice
you.
Job.
We'll look at a more thorough analysis of that.
No, just if you have time.
Okay. Oh, yeah, we'll make the changes and then any variances, we're going to say Tom is wrong.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Because none of us want to guess on fuel right now.
I like that. That's a good approach. All righty. So that's our first reading of the budget. Thank you, Budget Committee staff, and Shayla. I see Shayla's online, or was online, for that. So I appreciate her historical input on that as well. Okay. We'll see that next month. We'll have a formal adoption next month. Okay. Very good. We'll move into their staff reports. Colin, CIP updates.
Yeah. We got it finally an easy month. We have action items every month pretty heavily, so it should be pretty straightforward. So in our last meeting, we approved two contracts, nav aids and airport and drainage. So schedules 1 through 4 are wrapping up in the next few months. Those will be done. We'll be done talking about those, and we will transition to these two. To start with the nav aids, this is shown in green. It is the phase that really showed has the most impact, is what I'd say. I mean, we're going to be impacting all the ILS equipment. It's going to have a few months of pretty heavy impact, and we're working with airlines and tenants to make sure that's well communicated. FAA, I mean, it's been years in the making to make that happen. Everything seems to be on track and good, so very positive news. But won't spend too much time on it, but that's going to be the primary focus as we move into the next year. Earthwork and drainage schedules start at 5 through 7. Those are all awarded. Move forward. 5 and 7 will begin in October, November timeframe, so it's very soon. The 7 portion or 6 portion happens after the NAV is completed, so go on after. That won't really have any operational impacts. It will be more pictures of Earthwork next year. You will be able to build it from 1 through 4 in these meetings. Runway 422, rehab is completely done. All the paving rehab is complete. Markings are in. Grooving's done. The only thing that's remaining are some lights and the air show equipment. Progressing here needs to be removed. That's happening this week. If Dylan can cat her grab horse and get them out of here, we should be ready to open that back up at the end of the week and fully operational. Under budget. So.
It looks nice. Yep. Well done. Yeah, contractor did a good job.
I agree. Employee parking lot, that's been finished for a little while. Terminal parking lot, we overdone a portion of it for the air show. There's still some remaining landscape, but all the paving's done. It looks good. Ben and I did a walk this morning, kind of talked about some punch list items that we're working on, but this is also on track to be completed. Taxi lane, Charlie 1 Alpha, this was approved in our last board meeting as well. The work today. We met with the GA tenants yesterday and talked to them. It was a really easy meeting, a lot easier than I anticipated, and I think a lot of that's because Dylan did a good job of reaching out to key tenants in advance and letting them know so they had time to adjust and take care of their facilities and get their airplanes out of the way.
How does that impact the regular user, like a CMU?
They are essentially completely down for that 3-day period.
Okay.
That taxiway is closed for 3 days. Now, we have talked to United. They are going to mill transitions on basically that far left end and far right end. So when they're done for their work, with the work for the day, aircraft could get in or out at nighttime. But that was more of a courtesy, and no one could really even ask for it. We're just trying to be helpful. But I think with the notice that Dylan gave them, I think they've just made adjustments and are okay with it. I think they see the benefit of repaving the area.
And if I may, we offered them, I really should make a shout out to West Star Aviation, specifically Teresa Garner, for providing some ramp space to the tenants that will be affected. So I know CMU has been in discussions with them, CMU Tech specifically, with relocating aircraft during that time so they can still operate. So I think we're in a good place with that. CareFlight being the other big one.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're affected by this, and they've already made those adjustments. So.
Were they able to get ramp space, do you think?
Yes.
Okay. And FOD control in that process?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they'll clean up on the ramp in case anybody wants to use that taxi lane, but I don't anticipate anyone will, frankly. I mean, it's going to be closed until 8 at night. I think it's the hours that it's lethal, 8 at night.
Okay.
No one seemed to even care when I told them that was an option. They're just, it seemed very uneventful. I expected pushback, frankly, and even though I do think Dylan did a great job
It looks pretty good right now with that overlay that we did last year or year before. So I guess it'll look even better.
It'll look even better. This is the last slide. Not a lot to update. Everything's green. The next, so everything's been bid, contracted. We're still waiting on grant for Schedule 6. That should actually be yellow. We're expecting that in the spring. But the next big thing that we want to draw your attention to is the pavement, what we call the pavement package one with the yellow. We had our CIP meeting with CDOT Aeronautics and the FAA a few weeks ago. We are counting on around $8 or $9 more million coming through next year as discretionary. So that would be used for pavement package one is what we're calling it is. You guys remember we've started meeting Hunt on pavement design. It's the first package of that. So likely primarily subbase for a portion of the runway. But looking forward to that too. We'll have bids in hand in the May timeframe. We'll be able to hopefully award that late in the year.
And we're expecting that above and beyond that Schedule 6
yes.
grant
yep.
as well.
Yeah, good point. Last point on this is typically what we'll do, if you remember in the winter, we will bring to you draft grants, and those have numbers associated with what we think it is, typically higher than what will end up being awarded. So I said $8 or $9 million, it'll probably be $10 to $12 million just as a placeholder. And we do that to help communicate with CDOT and the FAA. It's just so they know we're serious. They know that you guys support moving forward with it. And then in the spring, when we do capture that grant, we'll send revised grants and approvals and all that sort of stuff. But that'll be your next action item that's brought to you in the next few months to kind of set the table for that for the payment package.
And remind me, Colin, that Schedule 6 grant award.
It's green and it should be yellow.
What date should that be? We're hoping no later than
June. We would love it if it's April, May, but
yeah.
I think we've been holding tentatively that August frame, especially with kind of what's going on in D.C. I mean, I think there's a chance that's later in the year.
Okay,
Colin, we don't expect that one before pavement package one.
Well, that would be the priority. I mean, their first priority is to give us a Schedule 6 grant by communicating with them. So as soon as they have money, I think they'll turn that loose first. Now, we've been holding it on that August date just to be conservative.
Yep.
I think it would likely come in two ways.
Perfect. Thank you for that reminder.
Good catch, Wendy, on the little yellow box under Schedule 6, Grand Award.
He called it out. I was just listening.
Well, I didn't catch it right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing. I thought maybe it was Christmas early for us, so. All right. Any questions for Colin? All right, lots of moving parts. The NAVAID project, in your world, Dylan, that all the moving parts coming together okay?
Yeah, I think we're getting our arms around it. I think we'll be in good shape. Time's still on our side. That communication one is already underway, so that's okay. The biggest one. It's the communication side of it, but we'll be ready for it.
Great, thank you. All right, we'll move on to Angela's executive director report. Thank you, Angela.
Sure. So I'll give an air service update. First, have a few other things to report. First, I wanted to just formally say thank you to Dylan and Cameron in particular for all of their work to make the air show successful. So, you know, there's a joke at airports that the best air show is at someone else's airport. So Dylan, for those who came out of the air show, you probably didn't see Dylan unless you looked up because he was up with the air boss managing things, but it was a ton of work to get this prepared for Dylan and our operations team. And, you know, these events have a long tail at an airport. There's all sorts of stuff that we need to go through and keep cleaning up and fixing, but they did such a good job. And then Cameron, I'm not sure if the board knows, that Cameron wears a few hats, not surprising, right, when it comes to the air show. So he is on the air show board. So it's a third party that operates the air show. He is on that board and specifically, you know, in charge of rental cars and golf carts and getting people to and from on the ground. And then he also led for our team all of the air show activities for friends and family. He and Christina, who I think is okay. So I wanted to thank Christina too for those who came to the airport event. It was so fun for our employees to get to come with their friends and family and, you know, really get to watch the air show with the people they wanted to and have everything they needed right in our area. So just wanted to thank them because it was so fun. And even those who didn't attend the air show at the airport attended it from wherever they were in the valley. Yes, and we got lots of phone calls about that. We always do, but Dylan's done a great job handling that and trying to minimize any negative impact of the air show to the community. So wanted to say thank you, and also wanted to thank Diana and Jennifer. So Diana prepared this budget. The help she required was remarkably low, but she was really good about asking the curious questions and checking in, and Shayla helped a lot, and Sarah helped a little bit too. And Jennifer has fully taken on all the day-to-day finance activities and HR. So Dylan and I couldn't be, or not Dylan, Ben and I couldn't be happier to have handed over all of our HR hats to Jennifer, and she's also processing payroll of those things. So just really thankful that we have the full team operating at really full speed now. So a couple of reminders for the board. So a week from today at 1 p.m., we have our annual joint agency meeting where we meet with the city council, the county commissioners, and the airport board. I got that time right, Cameron?
Yeah.
Okay. So 1 p.m., it's at CMU, just like last year, same room as last year too,
same
right? So you should have an invite for it. It'll be just an hour. And that's just an opportunity for us to update those boards. Big thanks to Cameron for coordinating that too. Your agendas are hard to coordinate. All of a sudden it takes it from a seven-member board to coordinate with to a lot more. Cameron has parking passes for everyone. If you want to also email them to you, but
yeah.
Figured we'd just give you a piece of paper you could leave in your car till next week. It would be easiest. So we're looking forward to that. And then we do have a board workshop scheduled for November 7th. We may need to use that time to ask commissioners to take action on our 2024 healthcare plan, so we might convert that to a meeting. But the main purpose of that time is actually to get board members trained and all your devices set up, whatever device you want to be set up on for Board Vantage. So Cameron and Ryan Springer have been working hard on getting the Board Vantage system set up so that you can do your airport board business from a device of your choosing. So for those who are eager to give their services back, Lindy, feel free to bring that.
I'm on the download from the website.
Yeah, feel free to bring that at the workshop, but really we'll just use that time that you already have reserved on there, but just know that's what the purpose is. So more to come on that, but things are going well. So that's 11:30 to 1 is the time block we have. Hopefully it's on your calendar already. We'll still serve lunch before, but it should go pretty fast. And like I said, there's a chance we'll convert it to a special meeting. A meeting in Airport Land, a meeting just means there's action, and that's, it's formal under the statute. So we just have to notice it as a meeting so that, and have quorum so you can take action. Again, don't know if we'll need that because we don't have rate information yet. We're a very small organization, so healthcare stuff, we're just not a priority in that system, so it takes a very long time to get the info. So, any questions before I get into airport and airline stuff?
No, just thank you for all those reminders and for that app that's coming our way.
Yep.
Stoked for that.
Yeah, me too.
Curious where we're at in the airport, or the tower elevator.
Oh, Ben.
Glad you asked. So, Bart came in last month, I believe it was, and lo and behold, the wrong government was ordered. There's a left side and a right side. So, I followed back up with TKE, and as of this morning, they are planning to install that October 26th.
October 26th, okay, good. In the meantime, control's getting their stairs. Yeah.
They are getting some stairs,
okay,
unfortunately.
Good. Yeah.
And TKE was embarrassed by the mistake.
Thank you.
Cody, I'm a little hard of hearing. Was that an escalator question that you had?
Elevator
question, okay.
I would like the escalator question. Yeah, I want
the escalator. The escalator? So, you know, it went down, they replaced the one handrail with the other handrail.
Oh my gosh, that's fine.
So,
sorry.
They've learned. There's a new handrail in order, but now they're ordering three.
So. Smart.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. I'm sure you guys get asked questions all the time, like, what is wrong with that escalator? And the short story is new escalators have a lot of safety features. That's a down escalator, obviously. And, you know, it, those safety features protect kids like mine from getting hurt if they try to run up the down escalator by turning off. But once it triggers that system, you have to have a full inspection. You have to have someone who's qualified to do that inspection come out, and then when they do their inspection, if they find any little thing off, you have to fix it before it can open, and there's a long lead time. So,
yeah,
so that's why. It's because they're super duper safe, and I mean, they're so safe that they're just never on.
The safest type of escalator.
Exactly.
I tell my staff, don't even look at them wrong. You look at it wrong, it's going to show.
But Ben has done a really good job working with our maintenance provider. I'm like, hey, we need to have uptime that's higher than what we're seeing, so what are things we can do, like getting some things on the shelf? Oh, we can just provide you space, because there just aren't a lot of escalators over here. We have plenty of elevator maintenance providers, but there's not a lot of technicians who work on escalators, and so you have to have, like, a special patch on your shirt in order to work on the escalator, even if it's just saying, yep, everything's fine, that kid just got too close to the down escalator.
So it actually shuts off if you run up a down escalator?
It won't shut, it'll warn you.
Okay.
But if you hit the right sensor, you'll shut it off. It's got sensors in there to detect if you fall or
cool.
If the comb tube rises just a little bit, as if you're getting something sucked
like
in
a dress.
The spare it'll shut down.
Maybe there's some signage opportunity there, because by show of hands, who all in this room has run up a down escalator?
I would do it today.
I was just gonna blame it being down on top, trying to run up.
I would do it again.
So maybe some scientists in part down there.
Dear commissioners, please stop running.
Is this being recorded?
I'm faster than Cody.
Okay, sorry to deviate.
No, that's a really good idea, though. It feels so obvious. So, Tom, if you could stop running up.
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay.
Let me get your stairs.
Any other questions? Okay. Well, things from an air service perspective, I kind of hinted at that when we talked about budget, but things are going really well. So, volumes look, we're really at similar levels to 2019. Again, 2019 is back when we still had Delta service, so, you know, that. It's really great to see that gap being filled by other airlines, mostly United, but passenger traffic levels are about at 2019 levels, but the planes are more full than they were. So you look, you guys have seen these graphs a million times, but what you see on the left is the passenger throughput per seat. We do that on a 7-day moving average, and really that's a proxy for load factors. How full are the planes? It's not perfect, but this data is available much faster than any real passenger data. And so you in the lighter color compared to the national trend, the darker blue, and we continue to outperform, and that gap is widening. That's really good news. We need to continue to see that. Our market performs so well in this, especially this second shoulder season. So we're getting into a time of year where there's just not a lot of leisure travel at all. But it's, as most of you know, it is our busiest month for, I think our busiest month for tourism, but typically October is the busiest month of the airport. It's about as busy as September. There's just 31 days, but you know, we need it to be busy and we want to continue to outperform other areas because that's what keeps airlines investing a lot in these shoulder seasons, not shrinking that summer season into more of a school summer because our peak season is so much wider than that. And then what you see on the right is the throughput versus 2019, so that's just straight passenger levels, and you see that it looks really similar. So I mentioned that American is pulling back a little bit this winter. They're doing this in a lot of markets, so this isn't unique to ours. Fuel prices are high and looking scarier, as Tom indicated. Plus, just the leisure travel demand boom is, you know, demand is softening, right? That leisure, the pent-up demand, we're through that pent-up demand from COVID. Things are expensive, so we just see leisure demand softening. So you see American doing this in quite a few markets, just pulling back on frequency a little bit. For Phoenix, they have three flights most days, two flights on those off-peak days, like a Tuesday, and they're dropping to just two to Dallas. Whereas United continues to grow. So you see system-wide United's about flat compared to 2019, but they're up more than 50% when we look at November this year compared to November 2019 here. Allegiant, the number looks dramatic, but you know they fly just a couple of times per week based on the route. So what you see missing there is that Mesa, Arizona service that they're not flying right now. So just this, I think I've said most of this already, so I won't repeat myself, but big thing is, you know, we're gonna have two daily main lines on United starting in January. I mean, that is huge. And really, they've said Denver needs to keep performing well and wanna make Denver perfect, is what they said, so that it can be the anchor for us to grow other hubs from. San Francisco hub is still, they're still in recovery mode, really just recovering those routes that they stopped during the pandemic. And then, you know, the market into China is substantially different than pre-pandemic. You guys probably know that, but to put things in perspective, you know, United used to have, I think, about 30 flights per day to China. Now, out of San Francisco, now they're only allowed to have 40 total in the whole country per day. So there's a lot more less air service into China. So that's something. Harrison, I'm going to have Harrison provide an update to the board in the next board meeting, as long as there's space, because he has a catchment study update. I just think it's really nice to get to ask him questions about this stuff. But the numbers, you know, when as we've talked about it with United, they're like the hub just looks so different. The good news for us is that our route was never dependent on the connectivity into Asia. It wasn't. So the fact that we remain that way really helps when they look towards that kind of interim hub and what that looks like when it's not serving Asia to the extent it did. Any other questions on air service? Okay. We've met with a bunch of airlines since June. So you have the list here. Haven't met with Delta. Delta won't meet an airport that they don't serve. It's a really funky thing. And so we've been working with our counterparts in Salt Lake City. So Salt Lake City is their west hub. You all know that. So they're really working to try to get that route restored. SkyWest, we continue to talk to SkyWest about that route, but they really need that Part 135 service, that commercial charter service, to get approved by the FAA in order for them to do any of those prorate markets again. So no news to report there, but you know, on this list there's plenty of airlines that could plug that hole as far as Grand Junction to Salt Lake City, but as we've talked about many times, when Delta left, they left a two-hole problem, right? Connectivity to Salt Lake City and then connectivity to the west, especially the northwest. And so we're working on both those problems.
What's the conversation with Southwest?
So with Southwest, Southwest really can't add any new markets right now because of just the way their union contracts work. And so we continue to work with them on putting us, trying to position us in the top of their list as in markets they want to grow in once they're able to. It has to do with just, they have the strongest union contracts of any airline. And so when they added Hayden and Montrose, they kind of tied up their resources. Basically, those are contract stations. They need to use contract employees. They can only have two contract stations.
Yeah.
And so they have said they cannot do, their hands are really tied on growth for a little while. Plus, they grew hard in the pandemic. Their foot was on the gas pedal, so they really need those markets to mature.
Yeah.
Because they've overgrown capacity, and now they need to let that fill out.
JSX, where do they fly?
But JSX is like a Denver Air Connection type, so they are a Part 135 carrier. They're a commercial charter. So they currently are in Broomfield, and they were serving Gunnison. I'm not sure if they still are doing that, but out of Broomfield, they go to California, they go to Las Vegas. So they're a higher end commercial charter, and they're based just outside of Salt Lake City.
I haven't heard of Landline either, so give us a little background.
So Landline, their tagline is wingless flight. So they're a bus company.
Okay.
And they currently serve Northern Colorado Regional Airport and then the non-existent airport in Breckenridge. So they offer nonstop, it allows United right now to offer nonstop service to those places. So in the case of, we'll use Northern Colorado Regional, which is in Loveland, that airport, you come, you board a bus and go to DIA to get onto your flight. When you come home, you actually board the bus from the airside, so you get to connect at a gate. And so that's how it works for Loveland. You can imagine the draw for Breckenridge is your bags and your skis get transferred right there, so it's so nice.
Yeah.
And so we've talked to them a lot, just given our unique position in the region, we think that there's lots of opportunity there to serve ski resorts, things like that. They're based out of Fort Collins, and they're just really creative people. It's former network planners from Delta Airlines that started that company, know them pretty well, and so just trying to figure out, there's nothing imminent there, but we want them to be coming to us with their ideas. We want to come to them with our ideas to see what could we do. There's a lot of different possibilities there, especially as they continue to improve co-chairs, things like that. But Aspen in particular is a big draw for them when it comes to our airport and what could be offered. But they also have to make sure that they're not competing with their partners who serve up there. So it's just a delicate balance. But depending on which carrier, if we had a new entrant, I think there could be a lot of opportunity with a partner like Landline. So trying to really keep them engaged.
Yeah, really niche market.
Can they go the other way? Can they board the bus and then go straight to the terminal?
So that's what they want to be able to do, and that they've been working on to get approval from TSA, because like I'm from Loveland, right next to that airport. My parents still live there. They would absolutely rather park at the airport, go through screening at Northern Colorado Regional, board a bus, and get to go through the gate at Denver, right, and skip the terminal.
Yes.
But that, they have not been able to get approval for that yet.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'm not sure what Denver's position is on that, because, from an airport perspective, you really rely on passenger revenue. And so I haven't talked to my colleagues over there about what their position is. Yeah, when you think about what's all the alternative, right, is, the full thing they're replacing is you parking and then you going in and then you going to the restaurants.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess you could still go to the restaurants, but your connecting times tend to be a lot shorter than people paranoid they're going to miss their flight. So they haven't been able to do that yet.
Very busy.
Any other questions? I guess I want to make sure, because you'll probably see it in the news, I'm assuming we'll see it in the news this month, federal government will decide whether the SEC decides whether JetBlue and Spirit can merge.
Yeah.
And so we're staying close to both of them. We think there's a lot of opportunity there. We're talking a little bit longer term opportunity, but the market to Florida and the market to New York has increased dramatically in this region. Just really that it's the speed is just accelerated because of the pandemic. They serve both. We want to make sure they're thinking of us, and we are the best airport for them to be able to serve some of those key markets that they can't serve right now. So, but they're not doing anything until they find out whether they get to get married. So wanted to give kind of a ski market and just winter update, because I know this is something that commissioners get asked about a lot, and so do I. And so just looking and saying, okay, what is the truth? So this is an eye chart. I won't force you to read it all. I'll kind of walk you through it. So starting with us, bolded up top, we obviously have three airlines with four nonstop routes in January. We're going to average about 10 departures per day. And when you look at the change in seats, we have 9% more seats in our market in January of 2024, scheduled currently, than January of 2023. 17% more than January of 2019. So substantially higher than pre-pandemic. For commissioners who've been on the board a while, they know that first quarter low used to be really low, and we'd ramp up to a bigger peak. We've been working to really stabilize because we do have strong year-round demand. So we still peak up in the warmer months, but it's not as strong of a peak anymore. So I don't anticipate necessarily a 17% increase in seats all year, but really glad that we're seeing that in January. And actually, I should mention, because this kind of got lost in the shuffle, and I should have put out a press release. I probably still should, Lindy. But as we've crunched numbers and final numbers have come in, the first half of this year, so Q1, Q2, was the busiest first half ever in Grand Junction Airport history. So the fact that we're seeing growth in that period is a really good sign.
I just wrote one of those like back in June or something, or July. We just keep growing.
I know. So I need the good news to keep going. But,
and the date.
And now that we have a finance team again, I think I can pick some of that up. Moving on to Aspen. Aspen continues to grow. Aspen is really profitable route in its own right for airlines, and then the passengers they serve are really valuable passengers, and so airlines are continuing to grow up there. Not sure if commissioners saw, there was an interesting article in the Colorado Sun about the Aspen Airport. Happy to pass that along. Actually, I'll take a note and do that, because I think it helps. For them being so close, the problems they're dealing with are a lot different than the problems that we're dealing with at our airport, and just the thoughts of the community there. So they're continuing to grow. Again, Aspen can only be served by one airplane in commercial fleets today, and that's a CRJ-700. The airport just has lots of limitations. Canyonlands over in Moab is still doing their thing. That's an essential air service route, so that's subsidized by the federal government. They contract with the airlines. Durango, we put them in here just so you can see on the west slope how things are going. Things are pretty stable over there. Those changes you're seeing are small up pages. Eagle is continuing to grow. Eagle has made substantial investments in their airport over the last, we'll call it 10 years. And they are seeing a lot of growth. Again, they're served by three airlines just like us. But in January, they will have 12 nonstop routes. However, they'll have 20 daily departures. So it's not like those nonstop routes are daily. A lot of them are weekend-only service. Some of them are weekend-only service at the holidays, flown a handful of times for the season. So just want to clarify there, but they're continuing to grow. Gunnison, I'm going to just gloss over because it's far. Hayden is also far but closer, and they are continuing to grow a lot. This is the Southwest effect, but I think that's where you can see the point I was making about nonstop routes, 14 daily departures, less than 14, right? So they have a lot of less than daily routes up there, a lot of weekend-only service. I think the customer experience up there is getting pinched in the terminal at times, but they're continuing to grow. And then Montrose, you see that they're actually down year over year. But compared to pre-pandemic, they're huge. So they will have 9 nonstop routes with 12 average daily departures. So when you look at averages, their busiest time is first quarter, right? So you look at averages, and they don't look that much busier than us, right? 10 flights versus 12 and a half. What it ends up looking like is most days of the week they have fewer flights than us, and on the weekends they have a bunch of flights, and so things are packed. Their new terminal project just got done, and so hopefully that'll help their passenger experience a little bit, but it's just a really hard operation to serve. I don't envy the airport directors at those resort airports, because they have to deal with really high peaks. Anyway, I know you guys get questions about this, so I wanted to be able to point things out, and I think the first and the last are probably what you hear about the most in those comparisons. And so Montrose is down in seats in January. We're up. There's about a 15% difference in terms of the 15 percentage point difference in terms of the movement, but they are, they'll be bigger than us in the first quarter. That's been true for several years. Last year, I know they were very excited that they had more passengers than us when Delta left. I'd be surprised if we'll see numbers shake out that way this year, but we'll see.
Because they're selling their experience as a Telluride ski resort experience.
Right, the ticket itself says Montrose Telluride. Mm-hmm. So I hate to break it to Western Slopers, but no one outside of us knows where Montrose is.
Kind of unrelated, but the small general aviation plane that went down outside of Moab, mm-hmm. have you guys heard of a FAA initial report on why that went down? Or?
I haven't. That one from a few weeks ago.
Yeah, early October.
I have not heard anything of you.
No, nothing official.
Thank you, Cody. Appreciate the overview of that. It's always good to see on a seasonal basis.
And then last, kind of taking the funnel all the way down to what's happening now, this shows our actual passenger traffic compared to 2022 in our budget. And so in August, things finally leveled out, and our passenger traffic was just above 2022 levels and just below what was in the budget. That was really just a function of how the dates worked out with school schedules, things like that, and then we had some thunderstorms at the hubs we serve that impacted some flights, but things still look healthy, according official statistics. All right.
Okay, Diane, the finance report.
Yep, so this is the routine report to the board of payments over $100,000. I'm sure you recognize these from Colin's presentation. That first payment, Jennifer and I dispersed that our first week on the job. That was really interesting.
Welcome to the job.
I will also comment that we did submit that for reimbursement, and we received the funding from the DOT in October. So we've already gotten that money back.
Outstanding.
So this is the year-to-date financials through August, and you can see green shows that we are favorable for revenue and expenses, both. So it's this pretty similar to what we've been reporting at prior board meetings. Revenues are up because of parking, and we've been down primarily personnel compensation because of openings at the beginning part of this year. This is our balance sheet, statement of cash position and liabilities. The activity in these accounts, the variances are driven again by the capital activity. You can see that cash went down, accounts payable went down because of that large payment that we made out for the 422 runway.
Okay, questions for Dan? All right, thank you for having a very complete package for us. Part of our presentation today. Very good. Okay, we'll move on to Dan Reimer's legislative update. Dan, are you with us there today?
Are we going into executive session?
This says legislative update, so we'll go into executive session after this. Is that fair? Or is the legislative update, should it say executive session? What's your preference, Dan?
I honestly don't have much by way of a legislative update. I mean, you all watch the news, and so you know where things stand. The principal issue that we track is FAA reauthorization, and obviously that can't move forward until we kind of get things settled in the U.S. Congress. So, to be honest, I don't have much to share on the legislative front. As you know, we do have an executive session scheduled to talk about litigation matters.
Very good. Well, if you can get a Speaker of the House for us soon, that'd be helpful, Dan, whatever you can do along those lines. But would entertain.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, thank you. Let's go ahead and have a motion if somebody would like to read the verbiage as part of our agenda. That'll move us into our executive session for the day.
I motion an executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions related to pending or threatened litigation as authorized by Colorado Revised Statute Section 24-6-402, paren 4, paren B.
Thank you, Cody. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, very good. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. So I appreciate everybody's attendance today. Thank you for your input. And we'll just take a minute or two for everybody to prepare.